Folks, it's springtime, and this week's special at drhoffman.com is Core Restore, a one-stop shop for your detoxification needs. That's Core Restore. Look for it at drhoffman.com and come browse our full selection of great products at drhoffman.com. Click on the store. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to cover a subject that we haven't really covered before. We talk about many vitamins and minerals and supplements, but today we're going to talk about a specific one that is extraordinarily important but doesn't get very much attention. If it were a planet in the solar system, it would probably be Uranus or Pluto. Way out there on the periphery of the solar system, nonetheless important. The supplement in question is the mineral iodine. And we're going to talk to an expert. She is Lynn Farrow, and she's written a great book, very, very user-friendly, full of informative information about the iodine crisis. And the subtitle is, What You Don't Know About Iodine Can Wreck Your Life. And to give you a little background, Lynn is an investigative journalist. She's a researcher, former college professor, and professional speaker. She has been involved with Cancer Choices, Inc. In fact, she's the director. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to reporting on the evidence, the true evidence base for currently used breast cancer procedures and treatments. And she takes sort of a critical look at some of the ways that we treat breast cancer in this country. And that's part of the iodine story, but only a part. And she is also editor of iodineresearch.com, which is a great resource for people interested in learning more about this obscure mineral. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, Lynn. It's a pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you. I'm honored to be on.
First of all, give us a little bit of background on yourself, because you have experienced personal health crises that, in a way, led you to get turned on to iodine.
Yes, I had been sick for years, and in sort of secret ways. I had headaches, I had brain fog, it was getting worse and worse. I was taking painkillers every day, coffee to try to keep going, spent a fortune at the health food store, had been to many, many doctors trying to figure out what was wrong with me, and the tests were never conclusive. It depended on what doctor I went to. And then finally, after all this, I had fibrocystic breast disease for several years, and they kept sticking needles in my breast to find out if it was cancerous or not. And one day it was. And this got me on a road that made me ask questions, because in the course of my being diagnosed and having a surgeon and her laying out a treatment plan for me, I began to say, well, where did you get this information from? And, you know, I was very friendly with her, and this wasn't a hostile or an adversarial interaction. And she said, well, it's in just in all the medical literature. So I looked it up in PubMed and found out, oh, there's this 40% thing with radiation. Now, that's 40% of what? And I'm thinking 40% of 100, and I realize that there's a whole category of statistics here that's relative risk. And then I found out that it really didn't help. The radiation that was recommended to me had no overall survival value.
This is the so-called adjunctive radiation that, you know, when they find breast cancer, they take out the cancer, but they say, we'll give you radiation. And that's kind of like routine these days for just about every woman who has breast cancer, almost one size fits all. You actually drilled down, you looked at the literature, and you said, you know, even though the doctor says this is standard practice, when you on closer scrutiny, it didn't seem to be that clear an advantage.
I didn't. Yes, my main concern was, is this going to help me live any longer? And it wasn't. But they said, well, you know, there's other things besides living longer. Well, not to me. And I found out that it's supposed to sterilize the area, meaning it may get any little cells that have leaked away from the incision. So anyway, I tried to talk to her about this, and I didn't get any satisfying answer other than, look, it's standard of care. We have to recommend it. And I could understand that perspective, but I would have rather I'd gotten that information out front about the statistics. That is, okay, we can give you a 40% relative risk advantage for recurrence, but it's not going to help you live longer. If she had given me the whole story, I would say, fine, I have enough information to make a decision. But this started because I was misled originally. It made me drill down for everything else that was said to me on my cancer journey.
And therefore, you founded the organization, Breast Cancer Choices, which is this organization that looks at evidence-based information about different options for treating breast cancer.
Yes. So if someone comes to our website and they radiation is recommended to them, we give them the literature, the medical literature, and say, okay, this is what this means. You can take this to your doctor, and he or she will verify that this is, in fact, true. So we're just looking at information that was sort of formally known as facts, and this is a highly specific thing, and we're looking for overall survival value of this treatment. What is this treatment going to give you? Nobody asks that.
Well, it sounds like that sort of kindled your interest in maybe going a little bit beyond standard medical protocols into something as controversial as iodine therapy, which certainly in the field of medicine is not something actively condoned.
Well, it sort of led me in asking questions about everything and getting the primary literature, the studies that had been done, just going back and saying, I went to an oncologist who recommended chemotherapy, and I say, okay, let's see the studies. Well, I don't have the studies, you know, but my mentor has the studies, and you couldn't understand the studies. So I began to get this sort of being passed around type of thing. So I refused radiation and chemotherapy because there was no compelling evidence that it would give any advantage, and I didn't understand why they were recommending it to me. I started going to breast cancer conferences or just holistic medicine conferences and trying to learn myself, because as you know, there's a lot of information at conferences that you don't always hear just from doctors because of their being obliged to go with standard of care. And at one of these conferences, this is a very fortuitous thing, I ran into an osteopath from Cleveland who's a vaccine educator. She's famous for that, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And she said to me, oh, have you heard about iodine? And by this time, I had researched this for several years. I had researched breast cancer and everything for these years, and never had I come across iodine. And she said, well, you've got to look into it. And I'm thinking, oh, gosh, I don't want to be insulting, but if it had to do with breast cancer, if it was any way integrative, I had looked at it. But what Dr. Tenpenny was interested in was that fibrocystic breast disease, or breast health and breast cancer, were not that far apart. And that had never crossed my mind. Because in all those years that I had fibrocystic breast disease, they said, oh, no, you're fine. You're just so lucky you have fibrocystic breast disease. You don't have breast cancer. So it was in my mind, this demarcation that I had accepted without questioning at all. And Sherry Tenpenny was the one who just bumped into me at an ACAM conference. We got into this conversation, and I thought, you know, if this was anybody else, I wouldn't pay much attention to it. Because it's Dr. Tenpenny, I'm going to devote 2 weeks of research. Well, that turned into 2 months, which turned into 2 years, which it's been about 10 years now. And I'm still researching iodine. But in the course of this, I found out so much about iodine that I had to write the book.
Yeah, and it's an excellent book because it pulls together a lot of information. But you're suggesting, and you know, I have to tell you that clinically, I have seen this. I've seen women who have such painful breasts that they have to lie on their back sleeping. They you know, had a great deal of difficulty wearing a bra, but of course, without wearing a bra, it hurts. It's not clear which is better, with the bra or without the bra. Their breasts are like a minefield. We give them iodine, and the iodine resolves the fibrocystic condition. It not only makes the breast less painful, but it also makes the breast less lumpy. You know, that lumpy kind of consistency, like lumpy oatmeal that gets the doctors so upset when they examine your breasts that they want to do mammograms every few months. That resolves with the iodine. And also, your research led you to believe that iodine had therapeutic value for prevention and perhaps even treatment of breast cancer.
Yes, because if you look at the animal studies, you can give rats tumors just by giving them the tumor chemicals, the DMBA, the cancer-causing chemicals. Mm-hmm. You give one set iodine and the other set just regular chow without the iodine. The ones with the regular chow will get the tumors and will get the fibrocystic breast disease. It's almost like on a continuum. First it starts with a few cysts, then there's fibers, and then there's benign tumors, and then they just distorted them. There's pictures of them that we have on the web and so forth that are really grotesque, that you see how these poor rats, and there's a parallel in humans how fibrocystic breast disease develops. It's sort of slowly, and as people age, it gets even lumpier and lumpier. And some women have cysts like marbles. And you can't detect breast cancer. You know, the self-examination thing is a joke
I mean, it's scare you to half to death every time you examine your breasts.
Yes. You're feeling, you know, a bag of marbles, essentially.
Yeah. So, but your research led you to realize that iodine plays a much more pervasive role in human health than just protection against fibrocystic breasts or prevention of breast cancer, that it occupies a very central role. So let's back up a little bit. What is iodine, and what's its tradition of use in medicine?
Iodine is a nutrient, it's an element in the halogen family, and bromide and chloride are also in that family, too, so they compete in the body.
Fluoride, too.
But in his iodine in the form of seaweed, I traced back 15,000 years. It was used by the Egyptians for breast cancer, in the seaweed form. It was used in the Middle Ages. It's all in the literature. I started with the current when I came home with Dr. Tenpenny's suggestion that I look into this, and I traced it back to the 1800s, and I got surgeons' records where they had used iodine. They had even injected iodine into the breasts and into the ovaries in some case. And then I went earlier back, farther and farther in history, until I got to an archaeological site, 15,000 BC, and I found out it was being used then. But I did have all documentations. I actually got some of the old books, from used bookstores. This information is not all on the net, so I really had to dig deep. And I, you know, just then I even got from the year 1900. I got a pharmacy ledger and saw how many prescriptions for iodine was being written at that particular time in the Civil War and so forth. But what I discovered, and just the breast was just, that was my center of interest when I began. But once I started researching back, I found that there were conventions in the 1800s after iodine was isolated, and it was considered a universal nutrient. And it was in the Merck manual. There were just many, many uses for iodine, and it was widely used. It was like one of the most used things then. And that got me on my mission to see how many places it was used and how widely and the specific things it was used for. I also got, and oddly enough, a research place was eBay. When I first started, they were selling iodine suppositories from 1900 that men were using for benign prostate disease.
Wow.
So getting artifacts is really helpful. I got little bottles of salve that were then rubbed on their breasts in the 1800s. All sorts of things.
Right.
I got veterinary medicine, how it was used in animals. So that was very, very helpful.
Well, so there's two aspects to the iodine story. The one aspect, as with many vitamins and supplements, there is the malnutrition that occurs, say, with niacin. Niacin malnutrition is called pellagra. And if you don't, if tiny amounts of niacin will fix that, so you won't have malnutrition. On the other hand, you can use much, much higher doses of niacin to lower cholesterol, according to Dr. Abram Hoffer, to treat schizophrenia. This is, you know, megadosing or orthomolecular medicine using a safe natural ingredient at a higher dose for a therapeutic purpose. So I guess iodine fits that bill, is that your contention in the book is based on your research, is that a lot of us are walking around with iodine deficiency, but on the other hand, it's not enough to just take a tiny amount of iodine, say, an iodized salt, that we really have to, in some cases, boost the iodine intake many-fold and use iodine as a medicine for treating certain conditions.
That's why I wrote the book. I wrote it as an investigative, whistleblowing book that showed that we were completely iodine deficient, and this had resulted from removing iodine from bread around the 1970s, and at the same time iodine was removed from bread, bromide was added to bread, and bromide is an anti-iodine, so if you were going to add anything as a substitute for iodine, bromide was the worst thing. And at the same time, the pesticide, the fire retardants and pesticides with bromide began to be very, very widely, they're mandated. And so PBDEs, a fire retardant, was introduced at the same time. So if you have these two anti-iodine factors being introduced into the environment, it's like a perfect storm of iodine deficiency. And at the same time, I have graphs in my book that show that breast cancer in the 1970s was 1 in 23. Now it's about 1 in 7, depending on where you live in the country. So, and of course, there's many other things that have increased, like thyroid cancer, just sort of coming out of nowhere. That's increased as well.
So clearly, there is circumstantial evidence anyway for iodine deficiency. What about other things that we're exposed to? Chlorine and, I guess, fluoride. Fluoride is also a halogen, correct?
Those are both competitive with iodine in the body. So if you're exposed to chloride and fluoride...
Our water is chlorinated, so we all guzzle chlorinated water.
And I'm sure things we even eat have or drink have some aspect of chlorine or fluoride. But the biggest, what I see, because of the way we treat iodine deficiency and bromide toxicity, that the heavy here, the serious player, the bad actor here, is the bromide toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you mentioned about salt, when I started to write the book and I said, I'm writing a book on iodine, and everyone said to me, I get plenty of iodine. I iodize salt. Well,
right. Morton salt, you can get iodized or non-iodized, and everybody knows, you get a little extra iodine because it might be helpful. So you opt for the iodized salt, right?
Yes. The thing is, Dr. Fleshes, who was one of the iodine doctors, mentioned this, and I found it unbelievable to me. He said half of the people buy non-iodized salt because they think it's an additive. Well, that's the one thing. But even if you buy iodized salt, the scientists that I report about it in an article I wrote found that iodide evaporates very, very quickly. There's a different word that the scientists would use, but basically it gets
It sublimates, I think is the word.
It's a solid that becomes a gas, and
right. It's called sublimation. I mean, the fancy word. I got it. You know, going back to college physics. we have to learn this stuff.
You would know that word.
Yeah.
What happens, and nutritionally, you buy your Morton salt that's iodized, you put it on the shelf, and how long are you going to have it?
Mm-hmm.
And within 2 weeks of being opening, most of the iodine is wafting around your kitchen someplace.
Right. And, of course, you're going to buy that big economy size box of it because it's cheaper that way, so you're going to keep it for 6 months.
At least, unless you have like 14 kids, you're really
right.
You got to have.
And we're all told. By the way, we're all told to limit our salt. We're told, don't salt your food. Don't add salt. So we're getting it six ways to Sunday. That the very iodine that's already iodine depleted. I mean, the salt that's iodine depleted. We're not supposed to have much of anyway.
Yes, you're supposed to cut down on this nutrient that's already depleted because it's in the atmosphere. It's no longer in your container.
Right.
But even if it didn't sublimate, the iodine in salt is potassium iodide, and that's only 10% bioavailable. It doesn't get absorbed very well. The iodine they had in bread up until the 1970s was iodate. That absorbed like almost 100%. So it's the wrong kind of iodine in terms of absorption, but if you're a woman, you don't want iodide, you want iodine, because that has the affinity for the breasts and the ovaries. So it's like if you buy the Morton type of salt, regular table salt, it's junky to begin with, but it also is wrong on like three different levels, if it's there.
Yeah, what about the people who buy sea salt? You know, it's natural, or they get Celtic salt, and they say, well, I'm getting all the nutrients I need. Those micronutrients are in there because I can see my salt is, you know, if it's Himalayan salt, it's a little red, or if it's Celtic salt, it's a little gray, and it's like the difference between white bread and whole wheat bread. They're getting all those extra nutrients. Aren't they getting enough iodine just from the ocean, from the sea salt?
Well, that's a great question. Sea salt is a great, unprocessed sea salt. It has just so many different nutrients in it. But unfortunately, it has very little iodine in it. There's very little iodine in seawater. Seaweed just happens to be very good at absorbing it, though it isn't a good source of iodine for reasons now because of toxicity. But as he said, the salt is a delicious nutrient. It's a wonderful nutrient, sea salt, but not a good source of iodine at all.
Mm-hmm. So the contention in your book and by many doctors who were looking at this, Brownstein, who wrote the introduction of the book, is that we are in the midst of an iodine deficiency crisis. And so what are some of the possible, you know, for our listening audience, you know, we already mentioned fibrocystic breasts in women, but that's not going to help me very much as a male to determine if I have an iodine deficiency. What might be looking out for in terms of the symptoms of this deficiency?
Well, just off the top of my head, I can give you a list. Most of these things have affected me. Allergies, they're gone. Brain fog, gone. Dry skin, gone. Cysts and nodules, gone. Fatigue, thyroid problems, ovarian problems, unclear thinking, which is part of the brain fog thing, menstrual irregularities, easy weight gain. The thing that plagued me, I thought I was born this way, was feeling cold. Because my poor father was cold and very hypothyroid, though undiagnosed. So fertility problems, depression, heart arrhythmia. Iodine has been used for arrhythmias for over 100 years. And I've seen this in my own family. You have people that have had AFib. It didn't cure it, but it made it much, much better.
Hmm. Wow, because so that's a vast array of symptoms. And clearly, that should highlight the possibility of iodine deficiency. All right, this is a good place to pause. I think we built up enough audience suspense. So let's consider this part one of our examination of the iodine crisis with Lynn Farrow. And when we return, we're going to talk a little bit more about symptoms of iodine deficiency, how to test for iodine deficiency, and spoiler alert, it's not easy. And also how to treat iodine deficiency. What are safe ways to replete your iodine? Iodine is a controversial nutrient. We'll get into that as well in part two of our discussion coming up with Lynn Farrow, author of The Iodine Crisis. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.